19 minutes past 8 o'clock. You're listening to Morning Edition on KASU Jonesboro. Good morning. I'm Mark Smith. Joining us by phone this morning is Congresswoman Joanne Emerson, who represents the Southeast Missouri 8th Congressional District. Good morning.
Hi, Mark.
You sound a little under the weather this morning.
Oh, it's just the cold that's going around.
Yeah.
So I actually sound worse than I feel right now. So that's a good thing.
Yeah. Well, I hope you get better soon.
Thank you.
We've got a vote today, I understand, on extending the payroll tax cut and jobless benefits. Reportedly, a bipartisan agreement. What do you think of it?
Well, you know, unfortunately, this became a very politicized issue back. During the holidays in December, if people remember, and at the end of the day, we were able to get the conference committee working together and coming up with the best solution possible. There were a lot of things that the Republicans wanted to have within this piece of legislation, including the approval of the Keystone XL pipeline and things that we really believed would create jobs in the country. Unfortunately, all of the extraneous issues went by the wayside, and so there are three things that are being addressed by this compromise. Number one, an extension of the payroll tax cut for all Americans until the end of this year, until December 31, a fix of the doctors' Medicare reimbursement rates. They were scheduled to be decreased by about 27%. You know what it's like where you live, and as well as where I live. We have a lot of seniors who really do rely on Medicare, mm-hmm. and doctors who, because of the increased cost of healthcare delivery, had decided to not take any more Medicare patients. That's not a good thing. And so this takes care of that 27% reduction that they would have received. And third, it extends unemployment benefits to those who have not been able to seek jobs, but it cuts the time period, which was a fairly significant agreement by the Democrats who wanted to continue unemployment benefits for 99 weeks. It cuts it down to 63, I believe it is, and it's also going to require leave up to the states if they have laws in place to drug test for those benefits, then they will still be allowed to drug test for those benefits, and that's really important. It's also something that the Republicans garnered from the negotiations. So all in all, it's a decent package. Probably could have been stronger, but given the fact that my party's in the minority, it was a pretty good compromise.
Well, we've been hearing so much back and forth from both sides in this debate over requiring religiously affiliated businesses to offer contraceptive coverage. And the debate's still waging after the president announced a compromise that puts the onus more on the insurance companies rather than the employers. What's your take on this?
The issue has now, of course, become not about religious freedom, but about contraception.
Mm-hmm.
And the issue really isn't about contraception whatsoever. Basically, what the Department of Health and Human Services originally did was say that while churches might be exempt from having to provide contraception free of charge, I might add, for their employees, it would now extend religious hospitals affiliated with those churches, for example, would still have to provide contraceptive coverage for their employees if, in fact, in spite of the fact that it is against the religion, so Catholic hospitals and the like. And there was a lot of pushback because of the Conscience Clause and First Amendment rights. This, as I said, really doesn't have to do with the idea of contraception because nobody is necessarily trying to prevent contraception and women being able to get it. The unfortunate thing is that some outside groups seized on the issue and are painting as it, that the Republican Party, for example, and some Democrats don't want women to have contraception. That's not the issue. It's the issue of can a religious organization or a religiously affiliated organization be exempt from having to provide free contraception if it's against their religious beliefs. They came up with a compromise. There are a lot of people who don't think that that compromise is necessarily a compromise, and basically it says that if the religious organization does not believe in its conscience that they should provide this service, then the insurance company providing that group's coverage will have to provide the contraception free of charge. The problem is ultimately and at the insurance company's expense, but ultimately we all know that the insurance company's not going to do anything for free,
right.
And so that the perhaps the higher cost of premiums will inevitably be passed on to the religious organization.
Well, some of the arguments I've heard about this are that, you know, offering coverage doesn't mean the employees have to use it.
Well, that's true. That definitely is true. But and then the other side of the argument would be, well, it's against our religion to even offer it.
Uh-huh.
And I'm not Catholic, so
right.
I can't profess to understand what all the tenets are of the Catholic faith. But this is just based on what I've read and what I've heard from some of those Catholic bishops and the like. And so, at the end of the day, you know, the HHS is going to come up with the details of the compromise, and we don't know what it is. But in the meantime, the outside groups have really made this about contraception and not about religious freedom.
And we just don't know what's going to happen since, we talked about the onus being on the insurance companies to provide this for free, and we know that they're not likely to do this, and so we're not sure what's going to happen there.
Well, yeah, and today, to the best of my knowledge, I don't know very many insurance plans and or companies who have insurance plans who provide this for free. In other words, you have to, you know, when you have a prescription for contraception, then you have to pay your copay at a very minimum.
Mm-hmm.
But the law in the Obama health care law, it actually switched it to all free coverage.
Well, I know there are a number of budget hearings today in the House, and a lot of opinions about the president's budget proposal. Not all of them negative, but I'm sure you have your own opinion.
Well, first of all, you know, I try to be as objective as possible because you don't accomplish anything by throwing red meat. But seriously, as an appropriator and as a chair of an appropriations subcommittee, I have to, and I've gone through very carefully at least the line items on the budget over which I actually have control.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say all in all that this is a political document. And while there are, you know, some parts of the president's budget that basically retain the status quo, my budget, for example, is 7.7% higher than the budget or the appropriations that we passed last year. And we're going to continue with $1 trillion plus. If the president's budget was adopted, we would continue with $1 trillion plus deficits. And I dare say that the debt has doubled in the 4 years or 3.5 years since the president came into office, and it's unsustainable. I mean, in my budget alone, there is a request for $691 million extra for the Internal Revenue Service, which would cover about, I want to say, the addition of 5,600 new employees to implement the new health care law. Well, Mark, I mean, that's just outrageous. I mean, we can't grow government like this. We've got to get a handle on it. And adding 5,600 new employees to the Internal Revenue Service when we've just invested in making a much more efficient computer system is not my idea of making government work for the people.
You mentioned line items. House passed a measure giving the president a line item veto provision on the budget. Republicans actually led this effort, but you voted against it.
I did vote against it because I believe that giving the president the line item veto is actually contrary to the Congress's constitutional responsibility to do its job. and that we're, you know, the president proposes, the Congress disposes. So who's to say, for example, if we have, you know, things, let's take a perfect example of something that's important to our whole region, and that's the Mississippi River and Tributaries Project, ensuring that people who live down, up and down the river are protected from flooding and their lives are protected. Who's to say then that if, in fact, we have a line item veto and the president listens to the environmental community who believes we should just make this whole big area wetland park, he could go ahead and veto it. Well, I'm sorry. I think that's just inexcusable, and it goes both ways. I mean, it's not just that, you know, I'm a Republican and the president's a Democrat, and I don't want to give him the line item veto. I would feel the same way about a Republican president as well, and the Democrats would feel the same way about a Republican president or a Democratic president. Congress's responsibility is to make those choices and to do its job and to give an extra... the extra authority to the president, I just don't think is appropriate, and nor is it an appropriate role for the executive branch.
Yeah, I was a little confused as to the reason behind this Republican-led effort.
Beats the heck out of me, except, you know, it was part of the original contract with America back in 1994, and I didn't support it then. I still don't support it now, because we do have a job to do, and if Congress relinquishes our responsibilities to the president, we don't deserve to be here.
And one of the things you voted for recently is a pay freeze on members of Congress.
Yeah, I have never supported a pay raise for the Congress, Mark, until we can get our financial house in order in this country. There's no reason that Congress deserves to have a pay raise. And, you know, I feel badly for our staff who work really hard. But at the end of the day, neither the Congress nor federal employees need to have a pay raise. We just need to, everybody in America, people in my district are making ends meet on less, and they're making decisions. And we have to do the same thing until we have our nation's finances in order, and I feel very strongly about that.
The House also passed a bill yesterday supporting the oil shale industry and addressing some energy issues. We had a situation, you know, here in central Arkansas, and it's been seen in some other parts of the country, where a so-called part of the fracking process seemed to be causing earthquakes. Is there a concern in this discussion of this industry?
The sort of elite environmental community has always been against any kind of drilling in the United States, whether it's oil drilling or whether it is hydraulic fracturing, which is what the long word is for fracking, and. Mm-hmm. And there's been some concern in areas that it impacts groundwater and the like. I don't know if there's really any science backing up the claims that this causes, that it causes earthquakes. I really don't. I haven't seen any real proof of that yet. But certainly what's real important is that we explore all opportunities to become much more energy independent, less reliant on the Middle East for oil. I mean, obviously, we're looking at outrageously high gas prices right now, and I expect they're going to get higher as we switch into the summer blends that cost more to produce. And so, consequently, if we can't find the means, at least within the North American continent, through the Mexico, the United States, and Canada, we're not doing our best for the American people, and foreign policy shouldn't be based on our energy needs. It should be based on reliable allies, and so consequently, you know, you always have to be careful, and you have to be sensitive to any kind of environmental issues. But we need to have sound science and know what the real problems and challenges are before we just make some crazy claims.
Well, the House looks like to me has actually gotten quite a bit done, considering it's still early in an election year session.
Yeah, well, for the moment.
Yeah.
And I would hope so. We'll get this payroll tax extension done today, and we will, interestingly, within that, we'll have eliminated some pieces of the president's health care law to help pay for it. So that part is significant. We have our appropriations bills to do. I anticipate that in the House, at least our goal is to finish them way early this year by the 4th of July break, get them disposed of on the House floor. Who knows what the Senate's going to do. But in the meantime, we plan to get that done because election year politics will start taking over even more than it already has.
Well, we're just about out of time. I know you got a work week coming up next week in your CMO district.
I'm going to be in the district all over. I'll start over on the west side, gradually making my way back home. I'm like on the road in motels, I think, until Thursday, and just busy. And I love work week because we actually have enough time to deal with the whole district because it is a long way to drive from east to west.
Yeah, you have a large district. I do hope you're feeling better by the time that work week rolls around.
Oh, listen, anytime I'm home, I just automatically feel better psychologically, if nothing else.
All right. Well, thank you for your time today.
Thanks, Mark.
Congresswoman Joanne Emerson represents the 8th District in Southeast Missouri. She joins us from her office in Washington.